Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's January 19th, 2016. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We've got some great guests joining us tonight, including Joe DiCicco from DiCicco's Family Markets and Lars Dahlhaus from Liquid Projects. We're also happy to welcome back our winter co-host, Ann Becerra.
Hello.
How you
Thanks
doing,
for having
Ann?
Me back. Oh, I mean, I'm cold, but I'm happy.
So you just went to Jamaica, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, the only reason I came back was this show, so feel very, very honored. No, it's beautiful there, but it's great here. I keep telling myself that.
It's been fun having you as the winter co-host. We had some great guests. You know, you sat in with the Ken Brian Grossman show. That was pretty fun, wasn't it?
Yes, that was fun. That was like, yeah, the first two shows were Garrett Oliver and Ken and Brian Grossman. So I'm just kind of sitting there like, okay. Through, you know, just like listening and taking it all in, but good times.
Well, you're kind of a good luck charm. And again, thanks to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. And you can tweet us at @beer_sessions. Maggie is tweeting live. So a couple weeks ago, we were sitting down trying to plan out our winter schedule, and you reached out to Joe DiCicco, and you got him on the show. Tell us how you first met Joe and his cousin, and tell us what you think about DiCicco's markets up in Westchester.
Well, it's funny. I've met them probably on and off for the last like 6 years here and again, you know, just kind of keep missing each other and haven't had a chance to really get that involved in any of their projects. But I just think it's really great. And I think anytime there are people that are such good champions for bringing good beer and good quality food and just this whole kind of joie de vie to other markets that don't always get access to it, you know, I'm of course 100% behind it. And I think they're killing it. Great job.
Yeah, thanks, and welcome to the show, Joe.
Thanks for having me back, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we did a Westchester show about 2 years ago, and that's where we got to talk to you and Chris. You know, I'm really interested in what you guys are doing, because you guys have family supermarkets. How many years have you guys been in business?
So we've been in since 1973, so we've been around, my quick math, 43 years, something like that. 42 years, sorry. Nope, almost, well, 2016, so.
Math is hard.
There you go. So yeah, we've been in it a while, but in terms of, you know, the whole beer program that we've been putting together, that really took off probably, you know, 2006 was the boom up in, we like to say the boom up in Westchester. And that was started with just having awesome, you know, beer selections on the shelf, but then also curating growler programs and then eventually on-premise bars inside the stores, which was kind of crazy at the time when we started doing that. And yeah, I mean, our stores, they... we're looking between 12 and 20 draft lines inside a supermarket. You're doing your shopping, you go grab a beer or wine and just hang out, create a nice little atmosphere, something different for everybody. So,
well, that's great.
I could live there.
I know.
That's all I need.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
But that's pretty awesome. So you're going to be part of our panel today, and we'll be tasting a lot of beers. And is it true that you guys are like the top retailer of craft beer in Westchester?
Definitely Westchester. We've you know, depending on how you feel about some of the beer rating websites, we've been said, you know, top retailer in the country, you could say, or definitely New York in terms of, beer retailers. So we've got some accolades to our name for sure.
All right. Well, we got some great beers to taste, and we're going to talk to you more, Joe. And Lars Dahlhaus, we've known you for years. You worked for a beer importing company before. You brought some great brands to us, including Ondex.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of fun with you.
Oh, that's you?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite. Oh, my goodness. I have that on right now, actually.
He's a great pedigree. But what you've done is now you've kind of created your own import company.
Essentially, yes. So after having run my own import company for 6 years from 2003 to 2009, I started working for St. Killian Importing. And as part of my job there, I brought in Ondex, I brought in Traunstein and Roadhouse and some other really, really amazing brands. And I left just to look for something on my own and started a company called Liquid Projects and hooked up with a porterhouse brewery from Ireland, hooked up with five other breweries from Germany that we're in the process of bringing over, and we're also representing Fentimans on the East Coast. So some amazing little projects in our belly, and I'm very excited to bring craft European beer over here in the same vein as some of the American craft brewers are seeing it, and we're not building a massive mega brand or so, anything like that. We just bring really quality stuff over. And Porterhouse is really a great example of that. A brewery been existing for 20 years. And we're celebrating their 20 years anniversary this year, right now, as a matter of fact. And Barry, who's been involved with the brand for a couple of years, can talk a little bit more about that.
Hey, Barry, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy. So, so basically I work for Francis Tavern, and we would be like the chief, I guess, pourer of the Porterhouse beers in North America. The Porterhouse of Francis Tavern have been together for about 4 years, and I've been there for all that time. So we've had some great success with the Porterhouse beers. They've had a great success at home, so it's time now
so
to Francis take America.
Francis Tavern, it's like probably the oldest tavern in New York City.
Yeah, it technically is the oldest tavern, as in like it's been around since 1762. I mean, that's broken time. You know, after the American Revolution, it would have been used as the Department of Treasury and things like that. Whereas, you know, other bars maybe would have had, you know, a steady period of time where they remained open as taverns, you know.
And then what happened? The Porterhouse came in and took it over?
Yeah, so it's about 5-6 years ago, the owners of the Porterhouse were in New York for a weekend. They were having a drink, and they were in Francis Tavern. They heard that the tender was going out for a new bar to take over and do their thing. and they put themselves forward. They won the tender. Part of that deal was renovating, and they did a really good job renovating, put a good amount of time and effort and money into it. And it's been a great success ever since. It's the most successful the tavern's ever been, actually, in recent history, at least. Anyway,
no, it's great. You really changed it. I've been down there a few times, and you got Richard here too. So tell us what you do, because this is like a very interesting show we're
Cheers, Jimmy,
developing
thanks
here
for having me. So I kind of work for Porterhouse globally. I work down at Francis Tavern as the day job, and I also work for Liquid Projects with Lars here, so I'm be the main New York sales rep for Porterhouse beers in New York City.
All right, hey Joe, have you been down to Francis Tavern?
I definitely am. Yeah, I've been down there. So it's cool. Yeah, it's a cool spot. I mean, it's just one of the good spots to hit down when anytime we're in the city coming down from the, you know, upstate. So for
have
sure.
Have you been there, Ann?
Oh, I've been there a ton. They have a great beer. So it's not just Porterhouse. They have a ton of great craft beer, but also a really good whiskey list.
Yeah, like we've got over 200 whiskeys. Our whole kind of idea is to support, you know, smaller producers. So like ourselves as in the Porterhouse beers, but also like American and both beer and whiskey producers and distillers and everything. That's what we're about, you know. So that's why we've got a really eclectic kind of list of different whiskeys and beers from around America, you know.
And I remember when I first tried Porterhouse, it was probably 6 or 7 years ago, and it was presented as the first craft Irish beer in America. So people were ready for that and interested, and I remember having it quite a few times. I had the Oyster Stout on draft. I know at Jimmy's number 43. Tell us more about Porterhouse as a brand.
Yeah, I mean, Porterhouse really were part of the first wave of Irish craft brewers. They've been brewing beer as the Porterhouse since 1996. That started off as a brew pub in the Temple Bar neighborhood of Dublin. And the drinking climate in Ireland at the time was such that the industry gave them 6 months tops to stay in business brewing their own beer and trying to compete with Guinness, Heineken, Budweiser. And they completely confounded all expectations. They've won multiple awards for a few of their beers, Plain Porter, Oyster Stout. The Plain, which we're drinking right now, has actually won the gold medal in the Irish Dry Stout category at the International Brewing Industry Awards in Burton-on-Trent. So we like to always talk about how we're officially the best Irish stout in the world. But yeah, it's a beautiful drop, and we're going from strength to strength. We're about to open a brand new brewing facility in North City Centre, Dublin, towards the end of the year. So, yeah.
I mean, we're all fans of craft beer. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? I mean, so just that 20 years ago in Dublin, I mean, what do you think made Porterhouse successful despite all the odds?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think it's craft was such an unknown quantity back then. People were just used to drinking the same three beers. It's kind of a known thing in Ireland that Irish people are the most brand loyal people in the world. You know, you have a Smithwick's drinker, he's going to keep drinking that for 20 years. So the fact as well, they opened their brew pub on one of the busiest corners in Dublin City, obviously helped. They had a large amount of foot traffic, large volume. And yeah, you couldn't buy Guinness or Heineken or anything in their pub. So people kind of have to try it. And that's the great thing about our beers. They are expensive and they're a bit of an unknown quantity in the United States. But as soon as people try them, they're sold instantly.
Is there a good craft beer scene in Ireland now?
It's starting to blow up now. Yeah. I mean, the Porterhouse were doing it they've been brewing it since 96, but they had a bar since 1989. That was really one of the first craft beer bars in Ireland. But I'd say, what'd you say, Barry, like in the last 2-3 years, it's really exploded?
Yeah, it's gone crazy and it's gone national. I mean, that's the big thing. It's not just Dublin. In fact, it's not even that much in Dublin. It's actually, you know, Galway, Kerry. It's down to sticks, as we call it, you know. And it's people brewing beer that they can be proud of. You know, that was the thing with Guinness. Before Guinness took over Ireland, every little borough, every little neighbourhood in Ireland had their brewery, you know. Guinness came in there and kind of took over. So now we're getting back to that in Ireland where, you know, you're going to have your neighbourhood beer that you're going to be proud of and you're going to drink and you're going to take around the world with you, you know. And, you know, we're seeing that now. You're starting to see more craft beers in New York, you know. So it's great. It feels like we're starting to really become a powerhouse in beer now.
Joe and Ann, let's talk about this beer. So this is, what beer is this again?
Porterhouse Plain Porter. This would be our flagship beer. It's our, you know, it's our Irish dry stout offering.
So. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of this beer, actually. And I think it's a bit of a resurgence in the craft. I know it's fairly short-lived, but in the craft beer community of the good, sessionable, you know, solid beers that you can drink a lot of and not fall off your stool. And I think that's something so easy to drink, but is still nuanced and very elegant. It's good. I love this beer.
Of course,
it's a nitro pour too, right? Yeah, the kegs pour on nitro. It's really silky.
And that's something that's very important to the guys, the owners, Liam and Oliver, that they want their flagship beers to be something that, you know, as Irish people, when we go drinking, we like to have minimum 10 pints. So, yeah, it's something you can sit there all night with. It's great.
I'm liking it. And Joe, what about you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's got the maltiness up front, and like you said, it just dries out nice. And like, I just want to take another sip, keep drinking it all night. So
Joe, what kind of beers are you pouring? So I go to the, it's De Chico at Family Markets. Is that what it's called? Officially.
So De Chico Family Market, we're a true family business. There's started by my dad and two uncles. So there's a lot of us involved. So the family, the umbrella, I say, is De Chico Family Markets. And then there's kind of me and my cousin Chris and his brother, who's not here. We kind of have our group of stores, De Chico and Sons, we called it. So it's like two groups of family, but we all get along. We do what we can together, but you know, the ownership kind of got split along the way. So,
but when, you know, so which locations do you have the craft beer bars in?
The bars currently are Brewster, Armonk, and Larchmont, which just opened in December. Yeah.
So on just I'm shopping there. I want to sit and have a beer. On tap, what type of beers do you typically have? And would you have a porterhouse on tap there?
Sure. You might see a porterhouse on tap there. We try to offer something for everybody. So we're going to have pretty much all styles accounted for. So you're going to have a wheat beer, you'll have your Pilsner, you're going to have, or a Blondale. You're going to have, you know, the way things are today, you're going to have 5 or 6 IPAs on. But, you know, we, especially for like a supermarket format, we get into the geeky stuff too. So you're going to see, you know, a Hill Farmstead on, or a Tired Hands, or a Other Half, or, you know, all these guys that are making the waves right now. So you're going to see something for everybody for sure.
That's great, man. And Lars, as a, you know, you're a sales guy ultimately, and you're good at
it.
How do you interact with someone like Joe, who's got, he's got buying power. He's selling a lot of craft beer.
Well, I emailed him 2 weeks ago.
Oh, boy.
Not knowing that he was going to be here today. So I guess that was a good thing.
So you just have to come on Beer Sessions Radio. That's it.
That's right.
That's how he got me, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
We'll do the anatomy of the deal in the next session.
And he and his markets do really well with the other brand that we represent on the East Coast, which is Fentimans. Fentimans makes a range of non-alcoholic sodas and mixers, but we recently introduced an alcoholic ginger beer called the Fentiman Hollows. 4% ABV, all natural, gluten-free, vegan, all the great things. And that's something that I approached them with, and I think they can do extremely well with, because it's such an approachable thing, and it's not really a beer, it's more of a cider. But yeah,
that's great. Hey, we're gonna take a small break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's the middle of January. We have an interesting show. Joe DiCicco from DiCicco Family Markets. Ann Becerra, Ann Likes Beer. Hi, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
And Lars Darhaus with his new import project, Liquid Projects, and the guys from Porterhouse and Francis Tavern. So we're at the point where Lars was talking to Joe about Lars is trying to sell some products to Joe's store.
Right.
And keep going, Lars.
Okay. So, I mean, the pitch was fairly simple. And as I just said, we're talking about Fentimans. I'm trying to get the range of non-alcoholic sodas and mixes in there, but also make a push on the alcoholic ginger beer, the Fentimans Hollows, which is, yep, is selling extremely well for us on the East Coast now. And I think it's just a perfect match for your markets.
So, Joe, how do you buy beer? I mean, was there a process, or you find beer and then you order it?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. You know, luckily, we have such great distributor partners in New York, as you know, Jimmy. And what it comes down to, we, you know, over the years, you develop a relationship with the breweries, and you know, most times you know what's coming out before the distributors do, or even the reps do. So we know when things are coming down the pipeline, and yeah, you know, beers and stuff gets presented to us, but you know, every store has a dedicated beer buyer, and they know what they're looking for and what the tastes are.
So each store buys per store?
Sure. Yes.
So it's not like you're going out and you're buying 10,000 cases of macro.
Not yet. No,
I don't mention those brands.
But. No way. Not anymore. Maybe back in the day, but not anymore like that.
Well, this is cool. So I know you're teaming up with a lot of breweries.
Yep.
So you brought us a crowler?
Yeah. So one of the additional services you'll find in the store, you know, we do you know, beer by the glass. We do counter pressure growlers, glass growlers. But then we also do, we just launched the crowler system. So that's a 32-ounce can, fresh beer that we can in store. So yeah, it's just a lot of fun, something different. Customers love it. It's a great impulse buy for them. So you
can get a crowler to order on the spot.
Exactly. So you like a beer, it's draft only, let's say, and you want to grab it, take it home, take it to the beach, take it on the train if you're in Westchester. Yeah, it's a great thing. It's been super positive for us.
And so it keeps the beer better than a typical growler, which I really appreciate.
Does it really?
For sure.
So it's a technology. How long have you had that system?
Maybe about a year, and it's probably the oldest technology that exists. All we do is we take the empty can. We do purge it with a little bit of CO2, just kind of getting the oxygen out, and then we're filling it off the tap, closing it up, and we have a canning machine tabletop that just crimps the seal along the top, and we label it, and you're on your way.
So, Ann, you think that's better than just a growler?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't, you know, there's no exposure to light. You don't have to open it. You know, obviously, you don't seal it like you would a growler, which you shouldn't do either. But yeah, I think this is probably, if you're going to take draft beer home, this is the most efficient and sort of well-kept way to do it, in my opinion.
And Joe, so this is from what, Russian Duck?
So what we're drinking now is we did a collaboration with Russian Duck. They're out of Chester, New York, which is in Orange County. So this is a hobby Berliner Weiss, which is that sour hoppy mix that's going on. Like that's probably one of the trendiest styles right now. So it's low ABV, 4.3, dry hopped El Dorado. Took the whole team up to Orange County one day, brewed it, had a great time, shared a couple beers.
So do you do a lot of collaborations like that?
Do a lot of collaborations. Like you kind of talked about before, buying power. I mean, not too many accounts, you know, can brew a beer with a brewery and take 20, 30 kegs in one shot, pour them simultaneously in multiple locations, you know, sell it out fresh, do events around it. So it's something that's kind of unique to us and our model. And we love doing it. I mean, it's just fun. It's fun. Yeah.
So you do that. You do some things across several stores as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And anything else coming up? I know last time you had like a cool bottle share night.
Yeah, so I mean,
Anne missed that because she was in Jamaica.
Yeah, so yeah, if I'm dragging a little bit today, we ended pretty late last night, but we did our holiday bottle share, which every year we invite everybody in the beer industry. So you were invited, Jimmy, but you know, reps, distributor reps, brewers, brewery reps, customers, bar owners, friends, and we just. I think the count I heard, which is not unofficial, was like 600 bottles last night were opened. So
yeah, and you guys as a big mover of craft beer, do you feel like you guys have a responsibility to the industry, or you feel like you need to showcase yourselves as leaders, or any thought behind anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty humble about it. Look, I mean, we're having fun. We're just really passionate about beer. So we don't. I think, you know, some retailers might look up to us or look for us to see what we're doing, you know, trend-wise. But, you know, again, we're just passionate about it. We're selling the beers we love. Our beer guys are selling beers they love. And they're really, I think they're really at the front lines because we're in a supermarket at the end of the day. So, you know, the mom shopping and she needs a beer. You know, she talks to the guy on, you know, that and work in the aisle, and we can convert them, or we could upsell them to something cooler, or let them try something off the tap. And I mean, that's what's fun for us at the end of the day.
And do you think that what you're doing is going to be a trend? Do you think that more supermarkets are going to open bars in the middle of the supermarkets? I think that's cool. I love New York State. I love the New York State beer laws, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. If anything, I think, and you see it definitely in the restaurant industry, I think people just want to drink in like a cool atmosphere. So whether it's a supermarket, whether it's a hybrid pizza joint or a... you know, like the markets now you see, they're like hybrid restaurants, eateries, stores that you see popping up all over New York. It's people, you know, they want something different than just the same, you know, just the typical bar scene, I guess.
So, and Lars, so what I'm drinking right now, I'm drinking like a hoppy Berliner Weiss. For some reason, my palate says, isn't this your alcoholic ginger beer? Because there must be something
for
similar.
Sure.
It's like
sure.
It's like there's some spice and there's sourness. What does your Hollow's ginger beer taste like?
Well, the Hollow's ginger beer, we should pop a bottle real quick. But Hollow's ginger beer is unique because it's based on pear juice. So imagine pear juice mixed with shredded ginger, and then it's boiled up, cooked, yeast added, and then fermented. So you have the natural sweetness of the pear coming through, but then the sharpness of the ginger, which is mellowed out a little bit by the fact
that... So is it a cider or a soda?
It's a cider.
Cider. So it's
a peri cider, yeah.
A ginger peri cider.
Exactly. And that's the original recipe of what Fentimans started making in 1905.
It's a true peri?
It's a true peri, yeah.
Nice.
So that's like kind of an English thing.
It is.
It's
very
like
British.
Spiked cider, yeah. Ginger.
Exactly.
Can we taste it too?
Yeah, let's get a bottle.
Let's crack it.
And can you grab one or...
And then Joe, now let me talk to you because for you, like, you know, because like with us in like a craft beer bar, you know, we only have a certain number of taps, and I don't really go through that many different, you know, styles or breweries every year, and I have my favorites. But you guys, between what you're selling, you know, by the bottle and everything, I mean, you must have so many different categories. I mean, are you open to doing these kinds of things? You know, hoppy ciders and strong root beers and all these other things.
Absolutely. So, you know, especially when Lars emailed me 2 weeks ago, it's really an easy sell because we see it. And I mean, don't forget, at the end of the day, we're a supermarket. So on the grocery side, you know, the gluten-free category, celiac, you know, intolerance, the ciders have just exploded for us. And we do focus on a lot of, you know, natural organic allergen-free products in the store on the grocery side. So it just makes a lot of sense for, especially the cider category, for sure.
I remember like in the late 1980s, early 1990s, there was this like huge growth of New York City delis that on the corner would have like, they'd say, we have 400 beers. And how many different beers do you carry in your typical store?
We might have had that, one of those signs too, by the way, probably back then. Now, you know, I think like our Brewster store, maybe around 3,000, something like that. And it's not, you know, it's funny because you tell a real beer person, 3,000 beer, you know, they might roll their eyes because it's not, well, how do we keep it fresh?
Who's rolling their eyes?
Yeah.
Not with that kind of volume.
It's true. Right, and that's what I would tell them. So, so about 3,000 at the most, and then, at the top.
Is that a lot? I mean, for Lars, you as a sales guy, I mean, do you feel like you're going to be able to place in something like Chico's because you know he's going to carry everything?
It's definitely a place that we want to be in. We must be in. And it's a place that we can convincingly send people to consistently find our products. So it's a great place for us to be at and also see who else is out there, right? We want to be among the best beers, and that's the best place to be at.
And Richard, so you're out there as a sales guy. How do you walk into a supermarket or, you know, a bar, and what's your approach?
Well, the Hollows is very easy. As Lara said, you know, it's gluten-free, it's vegan-friendly, the ingredients are all natural, and sweetened with cane sugar. So it takes every fad dietary restriction you need there. You know, flies out in Brooklyn, as you can imagine. It's just a delicious drop. It's very easy drinking. It's versatile. You can drink on its own over ice. It makes a great cocktail mixer for like a dark and stormy.
I can actually see it on ice right now. That would be
a more kicking meal. I personally like it. A little bit of ice, a few dashes of Angostura. It's beautiful. And works
maybe
great.
Maybe some vodka. Huh?
Yeah, works great.
Could be like a Fentimans Mule, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
That would be good. Barry, at Francis Tavern, would you sell this?
Yeah, we sell it. Like, honestly, for us, it's an easy sell again. You know, any of these products are easy. One, you've got good ingredients. I think that like that myth that beer is bad for you or that alcoholic drinks are bad for you is gone. People realize that, you know, too much is bad for you, but like, you know, an alcoholic drink isn't necessarily bad for you. They've got good ingredients, it's nutritious. You know, a healthy dose of ginger is good for your stomach and all that.
Well,
you know,
that's what I was going to say. It is a great hangover cure for that reason.
How are you doing with that, Joe?
Yeah, yeah, okay. I need another bottle.
I think we need more, yeah. Let's go back to the culture in Ireland. So, growing up, when did you guys start drinking and it was considered okay?
It's considered by your mother or by your friends?
Allowed to say.
By your mother or by your friends? Separate categories.
Well, honestly, like the legal drinking age in Ireland is 18.
I'd say most people,
as it should be in the US,
start about 16, I would imagine.
Yeah, most people start about 15, 16. In fact, my first fake ID, one of my friend's mother has made it for me. So that will give you an indication. You know, and even the police force in Ireland, it's very relaxed, you know, and, you know, there is a certain amount of hijinks allowed, yeah, a bit of a, you know, devil may care kind of behavior as a kid in Ireland because of that, you know. So I think we've got a healthy relationship with alcohol.
That's a great line.
On his face.
I need that on a t-shirt.
You like that, Anne, don't you?
Yeah.
And what about you, Anne? For this, so the Hollows, it's not really a ginger beer. It's like a ginger pear cider.
This is essentially what a ginger beer should be. Most American breweries interpret a ginger beer based on malt, and they add a lot of ginger to it and call that a ginger beer. But traditionally, the first people that came out with it used pear. There are other alcoholic ginger beers out there that use grapes, for example, which is a lot cheaper as a base. Pear is essentially the most expensive base you could find. So
would you carry this?
Yeah, we could carry. I mean, it's funny. I was actually, yeah. That's all I was going to say, because, again, the gluten-free thing is huge. Ciders are kind of having their second, I guess, coming in the U.S., right. And everyone's excited to try new and different ciders and experiment. It's great as a cocktail mixer. I mean, there's several uses. I could totally have this.
I could see doing like a vodka mule with it, you know?
Yeah, or a dark and stormy.
Joe, any trends that you're seeing? Because as a big buyer, you must see everything that's moving. I always judge by what moves. When I see if it's a new brewery, if it moves faster than something else, then I know that people like it, even if I can't judge that up front. I mean, are you seeing any new trends or new breweries that people should know about?
We had this discussion actually the other day, Chris and I, it seems this like this whole there's a fascination with we're gonna call it like a social media trend. Like if you're a brewery and your can photographs well, that there's this following of, and I'm not gonna name any breweries specific, and not the beers are bad, don't get me wrong, but that's like the trend right now is like this social media. It creates this demand where it's, you know, and we're seeing in the stores where we're getting these breweries that we have to limit. We're limiting customers one can per person. So it's crazy. So that's one thing that we're seeing for sure.
And how do you limit them one can per person?
We're selling it behind the bar and, you know, they're usually okay with it. And it's, yeah, that's how it is. So
wow. Have you ever had a really big drop of something? Like, let's say someone was bringing Russian River to New York and they would only sell it into Chico's, and would you sell it out in one day or something like that?
What a true story is when West Flederin was released one time 2-3 years ago, north of Manhattan in New York, we were the only account to get it. So they Sheldon Brothers was really cool, and they about a pallet or two they sent to the store. So Brewster did sell it out in one day. And people were driving from all over the place.
How many bottles did you let each person buy?
It was a six pack with like a gift pack, six bottles and I think two glasses, something like that. It retail, I forget the retail, it was like 85,
like 70, 85,
something like that. And, but under the strict instructions of the price point, and honestly, it was a wash for us. So we didn't even, you know, there was no markup on it, to be honest. So that was a crazy day. That was a busy day for us.
Sounds like a fun day.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guess what? Heritage Radio Network is a great organization. I'm so proud to be one of the over 30 shows on it. There was a great fundraiser, and you should check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. Become a member if you're not, and you can get cool things like tote bags and T-shirts and everything. I might be missing the latest campaign, but it's always a good time to join as a member, right? And we're very proud to be on this network. Got a great show today. Amber Sarah's on. Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Oh, yes, this is a great show, and it's going to be a great tasting session now because we're all trying
to. So you're going to try to impress Lars Dahlhaus,
yeah,
who's imported many beers, and Joe DiCicco, who's selling more beer than you or I ever will.
Yeah, so, agreed. I'm trying to impress them.
He likes that he's smiling.
And hopefully it works because I saw all the bottles that were shared last night and got really jealous, so I figured we'd have our own here. So this is.
So you said there was a bottle share last night at what? DiCicco's. Where was it?
It was actually the Oath in Tarrytown. So awesome craft beer bar. It's about a year old. Good friend of ours, Joe Vicidami, owns it. Yeah, you know Joe.
He also owns with the Craftsman and Craftsman Harrison, right?
Yep. So he's running the Oath and closed down the place just for us. And we went at it for a couple hours. And
that's great, man.
Yeah, for sure.
And we were up there with you guys about 2 years ago. We did a Westchester show. I was really, really proud of that show because, you know, it was the first time I was really up in Westchester drinking beer, and great, great place. Craftsman's great. You guys have deep knowledge of beer, so congratulations.
Thanks,
on
Jimmy.
All you do, man.
Cheers.
All right. So, Ann, tell us about this beer.
Okay, so this beer I've had for 3 years or so. It's from Lawson's Liquids, and we're talking about, you know, things that people line up for and go nuts for. It's a very small bottle. This is their Maple Barrel Aged Basin Maple Imperial
Lawson's
Stout.
Lawson's Finest in Vermont, right?
Yes, wow. So Lawson's Finest Liquids. It's a bourbon barrel aged. It's an Imperial Stout with a ton of maple syrup, dark maple syrup from Vermont, aged in bourbon barrels that... what is this, like a
I hope you can take a picture of that and post it on your Facebook.
I will
Twitter,
actually. And this is bottled.
It's a real small bottle.
Yeah, it's like a really small bottle, and it's a hand-labeled bottle, number 84 of 96 made, and signed by Sean. It's a really, really great.
What size is that bottle? I've never seen a bottle
I haven't
small.
Either. 6.3 ounces.
A 6.3
ounces. So we're getting rations.
Have you ever seen a bottle like that before, Joe?
Actually, I think Fentimans comes in at what, 9.3?
9.3.
Okay, yeah. So close. Not exactly.
But this is brilliant. Have you guys ever seen a bottle this size? I mean, this is like the most, the smallest bottle I've ever seen of beer.
Well, yeah. Well, we had a Smutty Nose beer a while back.
The Smut loves doing that. But that's the thing with these small, especially the barrel age, they had one barrel of it. That's it. And so in order to get, like he gives one can per person, in order to get the most, I guess, exposure and the most people to enjoy it, it just makes sense to bottle it this way.
Just talking about supply and demand, like, I mean, it's gone crazy now, if you want a beer, to try and get it is just such a full-time job, and it doesn't last. It's gone, like, within a day, it's gone,
I love this. What do you guys think of this beer?
Oh, my goodness. I just tasted it.
Yeah.
This is exceptional.
Got about 3 years on it.
This was bottled in 2011, I want to say. January of 2011. So the fact that this has held up this well. 5 years? Yeah, 5 years exactly. And it's held up so well.
Joe, do you guys have a vintage beer program? Have you ever thought about doing that?
You know what? We kind of used to, but the rate that things sell now, I should say we do. So there's certain beers that we're gonna hold a case or two in the back, and then we're gonna bust out. Off the top of my head, a lot of the brewery from California, that the anniversary series, Christmas series, stuff like that, we'll hold and do verticals for customers. So, yeah, absolutely. Vintage program for sure.
That's great. And what about you, Lars? I mean, are there any breweries that you import that possibly have vintage beers that you might release at some point?
Well, there is actually a brewery that we just joined up with. It's called the Zollerhof Brewery from all the way south in Baden-Württemberg, which is close to Switzerland and everything. They make a beer called a Donator that's in the tanks for over 50 weeks before it's bottled. And not too many beers are treated that way.
Is that a Doppelbock?
It is a Doppelbock.
Donator. Yeah.
Donator, because it runs along the Danube River. The town runs along the Danube River, and just spectacular beer. We've actually had one keg on draft at Francis Tavern.
Yeah, absolutely flew out.
Lasted
well.
About a day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we this is why I started Liquid Project, because I wanted to have fun with stuff like that, and I can totally imagine us also putting aside a few bottles like that, high gravity products. And just leave it there for a year or two or three, and get into the market then.
I think that's definitely something that bigger retailers and distributors can do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the small bars. I mean, I sometimes try to sell or something, but if a customer asks for it, and I only have a case. I'm going to sell it. So right. For you guys. So what's the next beer that we're drinking? This is a nice change of pace.
Yeah,
I like the ginger beer, whatever you call it. But I am kind of a purist, and I do like traditional styles of beer.
So what we're drinking now is known as Brain Blaster. It's a strong copper ale, kind of like a high ABV English style bitter. The name is actually pronounced more like on Bran Blasta. It's an Irish phrase that means the lovely drop, but. That became colloquially Brain Blaster because of, as far as I'm aware, a lot of Spanish university students who are on Erasmus coming into Porterhouse and seeing it and seeing the high ABV, which in the macro-dominated era was something that was very hard to find in Ireland.
Is this like a winter warmer, or this is something similar to a winter warmer?
Yeah. And so they saw the Brain Blaster and just wanted to get their brains blasted, I suppose. So, yeah, it's a big, big seller for Porterhouse.
It's kind of blasting my brain. So
and what did you say the ABV was? I'm sorry. ABV.
It's 7%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, I love that's a brain blaster in Ireland, because it's a session beer sometimes here. But I love
exactly. Yeah. I mean, because we were so macro dominated for so long, the Porterhouse had a great IPA that still does very well back home called Hophead. It's only 5.3 ABV, and it's very like English style IPA. It's got a much stronger malt backbone. It would come across like a light pale ale to the US market. We just say it's a lovely beer, but we couldn't release Hophead in the US.
Not as an IPA. No,
definitely not.
So you guys are definitely targeting what you think of as the American palate.
The opposite of that. Yeah,
right.
I don't think the IPAs are going to translate well over here, just because the American palate expects a much higher ABV, much more astringency and assertiveness from an IPA. But definitely our stouts and our nitro beers, our red ale, so that's something that I don't think is very, it's hard to find over here, especially a nitro red. There is not a ubiquitous
beer style. The red ale that we import is very unique. It's also a nitro stout.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's the guys that brew it like to call it the like the fruit and nut beer. So we use caramel malt, crystal malt. It has a beautiful caramelly flavor to it. Very smooth drinking for a complex enough beer. It's very populous as well. It's something that anybody can enjoy.
Joe, do you guys have any nitro lines at your in-store pubs?
Not permanent. We do convert once in a while if need be for an event and stuff like that. Because we do draft wine that runs nitro. So if in a pinch, we'll flip stuff around and throw a beer on for sure.
And what about Anne, with the places that you're working now?
Yeah, at Taproom we have 4 out of 40 lines are nitro. So we're always rotating.
What do you typically have on, like, what styles on the nitro lines?
Whatever we can get. I mean, that's what's so great is a lot more breweries now are doing their version of their standard beers on nitro. You know, Founders makes Centennial on nitro now, and you know, there's a lot of great cream ales and stouts and fruit beers. I mean, everything. So I think it's fun that we're able to rotate after every keg. But yeah, Porterhouse definitely makes appearances.
I mean, it's always kind of confounded me. I mean, I pretty much try to stick with like a stout or a porter on nitro. What is the appeal of nitro as a style compared to like typical draft lines?
Well, I mean, from an Irish perspective, I guess it goes with that whole session, you know, drinking point of view. Like there's less carbonation, less of that prickliness that you get from carbonation. So you can drink it pretty fast. You can get a lot of them into you, you know. and in Ireland, that's a big, you know, drinking factor, you know.
Volume.
Yeah. Like we actually have 8 nitro lines in Francis Tavern. At the moment, we're carrying a nitro IPA, a nitro wee heavy, a nitro milk stout, a nitro porter, a nitro.
Are they all Porterhouse beers?
No, they're not. Other beers they're too. Not. Yeah, we have the full range. We're actually doing a whole nitro thing at the moment, but they're very popular with the customers, you know. And I think the American palate isn't really used to nitro beers because it's not, apart from Guinness, you know, there's no American nitro beer. You know, obviously, the milk stout has come on an awful lot in the last 5 or 6 years, but from Left Hand. We find a big audience for nitros, much more so than real ale. So
I was going to say, you know, we have casks as well at both of the places, and I think that the bigger that gets and the more people understand that mouthfeel and that level, the nitros are kind of taking off a little more.
I think from our perspective, the nitro is a good intro to the real ale because...
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
yeah, because people have a problem with the temperature of a real ale and the fact that it doesn't have carbonation.
Now, that's a great point. I was actually going to ask you, maybe this is for another show, does anyone know the history of nitro?
I know in Ireland, Guinness used to be served unrefrigerated in Ireland, you know, and as far as I know, the history of nitro is Guinness. So you would go down to the countryside in Ireland and you would get a beer at room temperature, and that's still, you can still get that. So, you know, if you were to sell a beer right now at room temperature without gas being added to it, it's going to come in like a real ale without that much carbonation. And I think nitro came out of that, where refrigeration had come in. People wanted a cold beer, but they didn't necessarily want that carbonation.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to do a show about this. What I know is that Guinness developed the nitro system so that their beers could be shipped around the world and that would be consistent. So what my understanding is that nitro is an industrial version of real ale. So you're right by what you said.
Okay.
That nitro is almost an intro to real ale.
In texture and in theory, I guess in concept. Mm-hmm. I don't want Alex Hall to come in and start. No, I think
that's a whole other show. But there's someone out there that's going to write in, and they should, because we did with just Googling, you can look at, you know, Guinness inventing the nitro system. It was the way that they would take the inconsistencies of a real ale and turn to something that could be shipped. You know, around
sense.
The world.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's another reason why I'm not a fan of it, because I feel like they tried to co-opt, you know, this weird system, and that's another show. But I don't know, Joe. So don't put any nitro in. Don't give in to it.
No more nitro.
But then we'll get the real ale. But that's another show too. We've had some great real ale shows. We've had some great shows on. And Lars too. I mean, you know, looking at the German style of beers, I mean, I've had a lot of Gravity. I'm a fan of Gravity Counter, you know, casks. In Germany, there's a great tradition of fresh beer.
You know, of course, the
fresh
area
cast put on a bar.
The area that I'm from, I'm right in between Düsseldorf and Cologne, is where I grew up, and you have the Kölsch and the Alt, and both are, if you go to those big brewery brew pubs, they're all gravity pours. They just put the big wooden barrels on the bar and comes right out.
It's fresh beer.
Very fresh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
It's a beauty.
So last thing, let's wrap up the show. Gentlemen, say a few words about something that we've talked about. And
why don't you rap for us while
we'll
you're
drink more of your brain blaster.
Yeah, super. Yeah, well, we've just tried a few of our beers. There's a lot more porterhouse beers out there that we're going to be bringing to the US market. As I said, our red ale is phenomenal. The Oyster Stout, I think a lot of people have heard of that one in the industry. It's a beautiful, again, it's an Irish dry stout like the plain, but it's a little smoother, sweeter, freshly shucked oysters added to the brew tank. So it has a minerality and brininess that I've never tasted in a beer before. And yeah, the new brewery coming later this year. It's exciting. We're looking to triple our capacity. So yeah, big things to come for us in
All right. Well, cheers to Irish craft beer, man. All right.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Barry.
Well, just representing Francis Tavern. So yeah, come on down. We're selling those porterhouse beers. We got a big beer list, big whiskey list.
So what's online tonight? I want a good beer. What should I get?
Well, you don't like nitro, so you can get lost. High five.
All right.
We've got the Grim, the cloud busting. We have that on at the moment. Really good. The Grim, you just can't keep in the house at the moment either. We have the nitro Oscar Blues that we heavy. The Old Chub is selling really well.
Flying Dog, Bloodline Nitro.
Yeah, the Bloodline Nitro IPA is really good. Yeah, we got some great stuff from Stone, actually. We're doing a Stone top takeover at the moment.
Oh, yeah, I have
that
on too, the Shakavesa.
Yeah, we have the Sorry Not Sorry, which is like brewed with peaches. It's beautiful. It's really good.
We're definitely going downtown in Francis. And Lars?
Well, I'm looking forward to coming back here and showing you some other liquid projects, literally. Bring some of the unique Germans that I'm bringing over. And so I can't wait to share those.
Looking forward to that. And Joe?
Thanks for having me back, Jimmy. It's always a pleasure just talking beer and having a good time. Love coming down to the city, coming down to Brooklyn, and you know, just like repping, you know, Westchester and the Hudson Valley and everything we got going on up there. So appreciate it. Come check out the stores. We'd love to have you back up.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, you know, it's always funny when at my bars when people come in and they're like, oh yeah, you know, I live in Westchester, or you know, fill in the blank town, and they're so proud and so excited where they get all these great beers at, you know, their local supermarket or their local stores. And it's like, it's just so nice to know that once you leave a big metropolitan area, not like Westchester isn't, but all over the country, that people are still there on the front lines, you know, supporting these great small breweries and really good craft beer. So right.
All
on.
Right. Well, you guys have been great. A couple of event shout outs coming up. There's a thing called Liquid Lent, Drink Like a Monk. A number of East Village and Lower East Side bars are doing a full month of Lent that we will feature, you know, either Belgian or Belgian style beers, you know, all month. And some, like, big shout outs to ABC Beer Company, Malt and Mold, Eastwood, Proletariat, and Jimmy's Number 43 in Burp Castle. Check it out, Liquid Lent. And then New York City Beer Week's coming up February 19th for a whole week. A lot of great things happening. Really proud with how that has grown. Kick it off with our show. We'll have a live show February 19th on Heritage Radio Network at 12 noon. And then at night, go to your favorite craft beer bar in New York City and probably in Westchester too. You can do a simultap and taste some of the special smash, all New York State hopping beers, malt beers that are being made by some of the New York City breweries. So a lot's going on. And then, of course, our special event every year and annual on the committee now, New York City Brewer's Choice is February 24th. Please check it out and support it. NewYorkCityBrewersChoice.com. We put a lot into that every year.
That's a fun one.
And we're trying to support all the great brewers that we know. Thanks to our guests. We got Joe. Everybody say their name again one more time.
Joe DiCicco.
Laura Stadlhouse.
Barry from Francis Tavern.
Richard Stokes.
Ambassador.
Thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. All right. Thanks. All right. Have a great one. We'll see you next time. All right. Bye. Woo.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.